If it's totally white, if the hadas is totally white, then there's no green left. It means there's no moisture left. And that's called the hadas yavesh, according to the Ravid.
Again, most of the leaves, though.
So again, there are two issues here. First of all, how many leaves have to be yavesh? And secondly, what is yavesh? So for the first question, we have a pretty definite answer, and to my knowledge, nobody questions this. It all depends on rov. So if you have a situation where most of the leaves on this stem of the hadas are yavesh, again, we don't know what yavesh is, then the hadas is possible. Now we have to ask ourselves the question, what's yavesh? According to the Ravid, yavesh means hislabnu paneha, becomes totally white. Do you find that in the Shulchan Aruch? Does he quote the Ravid? Let's take a look. Tuf Resh Mem, Mem Vav. Sheer hayaveshus. Okay? How much is dry? At what point do we say that it's dry? So he says the following. Afilu im nifrach bitziporen. Imagine it's so dry that if you put your thumbnail to it, it's going to crack. That's how dry it is. Im adayin yerukim hem, if they're still green, kosher. V'enam nikroim yaveshim, at what point are they called yaveshim? Ela kishi yalbinu pneyem, when they turn white and there's no green left. This is a tremendous kula, because it almost makes this set, this group called the Hadas Yavish, into a null set. It's very hard to come up. I guess if you leave it long enough, it might... And if you take a look in the Be'er HaGol on the side, he says, Tur b'shem arayvit. It seems that this Ravid was widely accepted. And this really expands the scope of eligible hadasim. Yavesh becomes something rare. Let's just see if the Mishnah Berurah adds anything here. Ishi albinu pnehem. Listen to this. I didn't know this Mishnah Berurah. I didn't plagiarize. He says, "B'emes ein matzui b'mitzius." He says, "You won't find in reality shall be upanav." This is like a non-existing set. He says, "Kishit mislabin pneim vade yaveshu." Now he tells you something else. This is really fascinating. He says that even if it gets white, you might be able to soak it in water for a day or two. And if it regains its complexion, again, I'd love to do an experiment with this, then it could be kosher. Which touches on a very interesting principle here, that can you have something that's possible that can be reinstated, resurrected? And he says the answer is yes. We'll see this soon as we go through the laws of Hadassah. So let's just summarize what do we have here in the Mishnah so far about Hadassah. Number one, we have the psul of Hadas Gozel. It's a stolen Hadas. Again, we said it's possible all 7 days because of the principle of what? Mitzvah Abba Ba'avera. And then we have a psul Yavesh. Now, what's the nature of the psul Yavesh? The Masifta that I have in front of me is very connected to one of the Rishonim called the Ra'ah, Rabbeinu Aaron HaLevi. He was one of the Chachmei Sfarad, the great scholars of Spain, in the golden age of Spain. And the Ra'ah says that the psul of Yavesh is Hadar. Now we know that the Torah requires Hadar in which case? In the Esrog, it says priates Hadar. We don't know for sure that we can equate all three minim with the Esrog. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he doesn't have that hekesh. And therefore, the Brisa quotes Rabbi Yehuda back on Daf Lamed Aleph is maintaining that a lulav hayavish is kosher. We accept the sheet of the Chachamim against Rabbi Yehuda that the word Hadar applies not just to Esrog, but straight across the board, through by virtue of what? What allows me to apply straight across the board? A hekesh. So Rabbanan accepted the hekesh. Therefore, it's as if it virtually says the word hadar in all four cases. And the Ra'ah therefore applies this principle of hadar as a requirement in Hadas to the exclusion of a dried up Hadas. Again, it has to be very dry, as we said before. But it's lacking in Hadar. Now, what's the significance of introducing the concept of Hadar here in our Mishnah? I may have mentioned to you in the past that there's a whole group of Rishonim who claim that the psul of Hadar only applies on the first day of Sukkot, which means that if you exclude something and disqualify it under the absence of Hadar, you can use it tomorrow. You can't use it today on the first day. The reason for that is there's a fundamental difference between the mitzvah of Dalet Minim on the first day and the other days, whereas the mitzvah on the first day is what? Doraisa. So the mitzvah on the rest of the days is only Derabbanan, which was instituted by whom? Let's mention it by name. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, Mishum, Zechel HaMikdash. Because back in the time, the Mikdash was a mitzvah to take the lulav for 7 days. That was a mitzvah d'oraisa. So the Rabbanan, after the Churban, created this facsimile, this kind of duplicate kind of mitzvah to remind us of the Beis HaMikdash. That's only the Rabbanan. Again, on a mitzvah, the Rabbanan will make a bracha, but it doesn't have the same standards. For example, if you lend me your lulav on the first day of Yom Tov, I cannot fulfill my mitzvah. That's called Sha'ula. Sha'ula is possible because it says Lachem. But on the second day of Sukkot, I can use your lulav because the requirement of Lachem was not superimposed on the mitzvah the Rabbanon in the balance of the Chag. Many Rishonim hold that any disqualification that comes under the category, the heading of Hadar, that's only the kapeh that we're only makbid for the Doraisa mitzvah, but as far as the Rabbanan mitzvah for the balance of Chag, we're not makbid for Hadar. And we don't require Hadar. So the Ra'ah is really doing us a very important service. He's telling me that even if you ever find the dried Hadas, which means most of its olim are dried, and they're dried like a white potato, then for the rest of the yontif, you can use it. Because it's only possible midin Hadar. Let's go on to the Mishnah. The Mishnah speaks about Shalashera. So we now have a tree that was worshipped as Avodah Zarah. We got to get rid of this tree. If it's an Asherah de Moshe, remember that when Moshe sent Yoshua to conquer the land of Israel, then the Torah commands Yoshua ba'esh tisrof, and any Avodah Zarah that you discover, you have to search and find Avodah Zarah, uproot it, and burn it. And therefore, this tree, which has the status of Asherah de Moshe, has to be burnt, and anything that's omeg l'sreifa loses its what?
Shear.
It's shear. Excellent. That's called kintusei mechta shi'ura. We consider something that has to be destroyed as if it's totally non-existent, and it's utterly destroyed, and therefore it doesn't have a shear. Now at this point, I would not have to introduce the concept of Hadar, because every mitzvah requires a shear. And presumably, whatever that shear is, the Rabbanan are going to require that shear and extend it as required even in the other 6 days. So it comes out like this. We have A, B, and C in the Mishnah. And it's really A and C and B on the other side of the equation. You follow what I mean? What do I mean by A plus C? A is what? A lulav hagazel. C is a lulav shalashera. And in the middle you have what? A lulav hayavesh. What's the difference now between lulav hayavesh and the other two cases? If you all like the Ra'ah, that Lulav HaYavish is only possible because of Hadar.
So the others are going to be possible the entire...
Excellent. Day. The others, A and C, meaning in the case of Mitzvah Baba Vero, or in the case of something that's Omid L'Sreif, it has to be burnt and it has no shear, that's clearly Mafkia, that completely undermines the status of the Min, of the Lulav. It's not a Lulav, it's not a Hadas. It's stolen, it's has to be burnt, it's not a Hadas. And that would possibly for all 7 days. But in the case of B, which is the middle case of Yavesh, which the Ra'ah identifies as a psul of Hadar, that would be kosher for the balance of Yom Tov. Shal Ir Anidachas, who remembers what's an Ir Anidachas?
It's where the majority of Jews are doing.
Excellent. You have a city that's populated by Jews. The majority of those Jews, unfortunately, were seduced to worship an idol. The whole city has to be destroyed, including all the trees inside the city. And one of the trees is the tree from which you took your Hadas. And I feel very sorry for you, because you know, you're not going to gain much from this hadas. It's omei l'sreifa, for the whole city has to be burnt, and therefore it's ketusei mechta shiura, and it's possible completely. I would put that in the same category as asheru.
What was A?
A was gozel. It was the stolen loaf.
And why
stolen hadas?
No, but how's that different in terms of the first and the 7 days?
I would say there's no difference, because mitzvah b'avir there applies even to a mitzvah derabana. So since it's a stolen lulav,
why is an A and B together?
Because B is yavesh is only, according to the rabbi, is only a psul of hadar, and a psul of hadar only applies to the first thing. Okay. You got it?
Why did the Mishnah have to say hadas agozel instead of just say any hadas that doesn't belong to you?
Oh, because again, the Mishnah wants to tell you that it's possible all 7 days. I can borrow your hadas on the second day if it's not gozel. But now that I told you it's gozel, I'm telling you that on the second day you can't use it because of its above avera. If it was only the chisaron of lachem, then you could use it on the second day. Niktam rosho. Remember, we call this the HH, the headless hadas, right? So once again, it's very interesting. The ra'ah, and before him Rashi, but Rashi is later on in the perek. I'm not going to bother looking up the Rashi right this second. They say it's a psul of hadar. So we now have, a case which goes back to Yovesh, if you follow what I mean, because we said that Yovesh is a chisaron in hadar, and now we're saying that Niktam Rosho is a chisaron in hadar, and therefore be kosher all 7 days. But then we get to the case of Nifritzu Ola. Now that's a little bit more complicated. Rashi says Nifritzu Ola Nashru. It means that the leaves on this stem of the hadas fell off. Now, if you have a stem without leaves on them, what would you say? Is that a chisaron in hadar? It's just not beautiful? Again, all you have is a stem. Let me give you an extreme case. An extreme case. Nashru olav. You know, all the leaves fell off this hadas stem. So the Ritva says, in this case, Harehu kimin acher. This is the language of the Ritva. It's like a different min. It's like a different species. Because the Torah, the first word of the three-word phrase that describes the hadas in biblical Hebrew is anaf. Anaf means that it has olim on it. It has leaves on it. This one is a leafless fadarbina hadas. And comes on the Ritva and says it's like a min acher. See, if the Ritva would have activating the principle of hadar and say, wait, you know, this is not beautiful, then I would say you can still use it during the balance of yontif. But if he's saying it's a min acher,
it's not identifiable.
In Yiddish we say das hasnit ken hadas, it's not hadas, then it would be possible for all 7 days. David?
Unless someone pulled the leaves off, they have to first dry out before they fall off. And since they rarely ever dry out, how would they ever get a species of all the leaves is just not there anymore?
Are you wondering how did he get it? No, so that's the Ritva is telling you that this is not a different species physically in the botanical reality, but alpidin halachically, since you removed they fell off the leaves, you have a stem without leaves. He's saying that's like another species. He doesn't mean physically that it's a different species, but it has the same halachic status. So don't call it hadas. If it's not hadas, I don't think you'd want to use it on the second day of Yontif. Okay. Now, I have to tell you, Rabosa, I'm perplexed by one question here. I don't understand why Rashi uses the word Nashru. Do you see that? Nifritzu Olav Nashru. If you go back to Nifritzu Olav in the first mission of Lulav, Rashi says something totally different. He says, Eino Mechubarim, he says they're not attached to the Shidra, to the spine of the Lulav. Now, admittedly, in the case of Hadas, we're not talking about a Shidra. We don't know if the word spine is applicable, but we have the stem, which is called the Eitz, Anaf Eitz, right? And if the Anaf is not connected to the Eitz, Rashi could have easily said, Eino Mechubar LeEitz. Why does Rashi have to say Nashru?
What is the translation of Nashru?
Nashru means they fell off. What does that sound like to you, Nashru?
Nashru implies that they were there at one point and then they fell off.
They were there at one point. Well, in the case of the lulav, they were certainly there at one point, because Rashi says they are now disconnected to the
they fell off naturally.
Oh, right. That's what I'm wondering here, and I can't figure it out. That Rashi might be saying that there's a difference between Nifritzu in the Lulav case, which I can't understand it, why, and Nifritzu in the case of Hadassah. Hadassah doesn't mean that he pulled off the leaves as a human activity. Nashu means they fell off. But I always point out that, you know, if you use the kaishaluch, you know, you be very careful when you put the adasim inside. You know, half the time when you pull out the adasim, mm-hmm. you'll see that all the leaves are inside. That's not good. You know what I'm saying? But the point I want to make is, why would there be any difference between the lulav case, unless we're actually saying the mitzias, you know, the leaves of a lulav are never going to fall off. They're absolutely attached. So therefore you have to have a human intervention here where he broke the chibur, he broke the connection. I don't know. But here in the case of Hadas, Rashi says that Nifritzu Olav means Noshru Olav. I have no doubt in my mind that there's something going on over here, you know. I just intuitively, I don't know what's going on, but something's going on below the surface over here. Now once again, I'm going to ask you an old question. How many of the leaves fell off the stem? Rove. Again, we're going to apply the principle of rove. So again, if you know, one leaf fell off, Mishka Ferloch, it's not tragic. And if you look into the Kaishluch and you find even a bunch of leaves, that's not necessarily catastrophic. But if it gets to the point where most of the leaves fell off, that's already called Nashu in Rashi's language, or Nifritzu in the language of the Mishnah. So keep in mind that we're suggesting, based on the Ritva, that if the leaves of the Hadas fell off, you can't use it even during Chol HaMoed, because it's not a min Hadas. Now we spoke about the Anavim. Do you remember this, Rabbi Osai?
Berries.
The berries on the Hadas tree. I don't know, I never bought Hadas berries. We have to really try them and taste them and see what they taste like. Hadas berries. The Mishnah says that Hadas berries are a real problem, because berries are called in the language of the Torah peri, pri. Again, assuming they're edible in any event. And pri works in two ways. If we're dealing with the Esrog, pri is good for the Jews or bad for the Jews?
Good.
It's good for the Jews, because the Torah calls the Esrog a pri Eitz Hadar. But in the case of Hadassim, where the Torah completely omits the word pri, and it says anaf Eitz Olos, and the emphasis on the anaf means the leaves, and the ace is the stem, no mention of peros, peros now becomes a foreign substance. For example, the Gemara back on Daf Lamed Aleph had a havamina that in the case of kapos tamarim, maybe you want to take a branch that has fruits on it, has dates on it. The Gemara completely excludes that. In the case of Hadassim, the fruits are completely excluded. They create a different min, so to speak. You got to get rid of them. Now, can you get rid of the anavim, surgically remove them, remove the berries? Well, here we have a sugi called dichui. And those who learned a little kodshim will hopefully remember the concept of, wow, look at this. Dichui. Now, in kodshim, dichui means that if something became possible in this bath, then even if the reason it was possible was removed and the reality changed, once it's dachu, it's completely rejected from the Mizbeach, he can't resurrect it from the dead. Here, in the case of Hadas, that's Rabu Anavav, it has more berries than it has olim, than it has leaves, that's not dichui. It's not rejected. Right now it's possible. But it's fixable. And the Sivas HaPsul, what causes the Psul, is the manifold, you know, berries that are attached to this Hadas stem. If you reduce that manifold, then you can be machsha the hadas.
So in this case, you can actually pull them off.
Pull them off. And we don't apply the principle of dichu. We don't say once rejected because of reason X, even if you remove reason X, it remains possible. Now, exactly why the principle of dichu doesn't work here, there are two basic theories on that. One theory is that we don't apply dichu outside of the Beis HaMikdash. For mitzvahs, there's no din of dichui. There's another approach that says that this is called dichui meikar because it was born that way, meaning even before you cut it down and had the berries on it. That's not called dichui. Dichui only means after it became roi, it was fit for the use as a mitzvah, and then something occurred that possibly disqualified it. That's called dichui. Okay, So that's more of a very in-depth discussion about the concept of dichu.
And this is also all 7 days, presumably, unless you can fix it.
Oh, so if I'm correct that the what word am I looking for in English? The vast number, the preponderance. What?
Majority.
No, not majority. The high number, preponderance.
Yeah.
Can I use that word? Okay, as long as we know what I mean. My wife would get upset because she thinks I misuse English words. But for our purposes, we used to call this as a kid pig Latin. You know, we make up that a word mean a certain sound means something, so that's good enough for us. So the preponderance of anavim really puts it into a different category. Why? Because it's not on anaf eitz ovos, it's now on anaf eitz perishal ovos, and peri is a different entity. So if the anavim are peros, then we don't have an eitz, we have a pri, and that might mean it's possible for all 7 days. I don't know. We have to really research that. But the good news is you can remove the berries. So let me ask you a funny question. If I sold you, I was offering to sell you 2 hadassim. One is full of berries, and one has no berries on it. Which one are you going to pay more for?
Without berries.
No, the one that has berries. Because you can eat the berries, yeah. And then hadassah is kosher. Did you follow that? That was just my own quiz question. Now, there's one day of the year which is problematic for removing berries.
First day.
And that's Yom Tov, exactly. Why is that so? The Mishnah says, V'ein mematim b'yontif. We're not going to allow you on Yontif itself to remove the berries. Say it again, Jerry.
Bearer?
I don't hear.
Bearer. You're taking out the bed?
Okay. So the Gemara later on says that this is called tikkun mana. Let me explain what that means. If you're not familiar with it, this is a tough. Tikkun mana. Tikkun mana means when I take raw material.
Is that a hay at the end?
That's a hay at the end. And the raw material is not yet suitable as a vessel, as a kli. I have to do something, make a change. You know, this is the whole issue about opening up cans. You know, like, how do you say tzinsenet in English? You know, the jar, but the cans that, you know, are made of tin. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
We used to use that in the army. We used to use it for the tilos yadayim. Yeah. Anyway, so you have these cans, and they're basically non-functional because they're completely closed on all sides. So this is an issue called tikkun mana. Now, tikkun mana, which means fixing up a vessel. So let's say, for example, you had a broken vessel and you fixed it. Is a tolda, it's a subcategory of meleches makeh bepatish. Makeh bepatish, which is the last on the list in the Mishnah of the 39 melachos, is fixing something and perfecting it. So whenever you perfect something, that's a violation of makeh bepatish. However, all of Shabbos can be broken down into 2 different categories. One is Doraisa, the 39 Melachos, and then we have something called the Shvus. Because the Torah tells us Tishvos. Tishvos means stay away, rest, and desist from any sort of activity. What kind of activity? So here's where the Rabbanan tell you what's included in Shvus. And they say that if you have something that looks like the original Melacha, it's not identical, then we are going to prohibit it under this Tishbos. So in other words, the Torah gave license to the Chachamim by saying Tishbos to define what's included under Tishbos. Now here's a basic controversy. How do we define, what does the Gemara mean when it says that removing the berries on Yontif is prohibited because of Tikkun Mana? And there are 2 schools of thought. One school of thought says Tikkun Mana, we know from all of Masechta Shabbos, this is a tolda of Makom HaPatish. That makes it into what? A malacha do rice. If it's a malacha do rice, if he, let's say inadvertently, he plucked the berries off his hadas on Yontif. Yontif is really not. Okay, I got into technical problem here. But let's say Shabbos and Yontif. Let's say it was Yontif fell out on Shabbos. That's not this year, I don't think, is it?
No.
So if Yontif fell coincided with Shabbos, then he'd be chayv what? A chakas. Right? Because whenever you violate an isukares for shoga, you have to bring a chakas. So that's one school of thought, that removing berries is a very, very serious matter on Yom Tov. The other school of thought says, no, this is Shvus. This is not a Doraisa. Because what kind of change are you really making? Again, I asked you before, which would you pay more for? A hadas that has berries or a hadas without berries?
Well, you're not improving it. You're not finishing it by taking the berries.
But what kind of improvement are you making? What do you call that?
Make hechsher mitzvah, to use it for...
Right, but I'm looking for another word. Are there any lawyers here in the audience, okay? What kind of improvement are you making? It's a purely legal improvement. It's not a physical improvement. On the contrary, the hadas was worth more before you removed the berries.
A legal fiction.
Yeah, okay, if you want to call it a fiction. I don't know. I don't want to call it a fiction because that gets me nervous because I read novels, but whatever, fiction. But what I'm trying to suggest is that this is not the real Makoy Tikkun Mana that was done in the Mishkan. You know, when they did Tikkun Mana in the Mishkan, they took a hammer and it was dull and they needed to sharpen it, so they gave a bang on the anvil. We're not talking about that. We're talking about a halachic change. The removal of the berries doesn't really radically change the hadas. On the contrary, I'd rather get hadas with berries. But what it improves is the halachic status, or as you call it, a legal fiction, the status of the hadas. And that comes under what's called a shavus. Okay. This little part of the Mishnah, by the way, which seems so secondary, don't remove the berries from the hadas on yontif, is a major sugya in Shas. I'll just mention the name of the sugya, if anybody ever heard of it. It's called the Shitas HaAruch Psik Reisha Delo Nichale. Because what happens if he has three hadasim, and he has a fourth hadas that has berries on it, and really he could do away with that, he doesn't need that fourth hadas. For whatever reason, he wants to eat the berries, let's say, and he takes off the berries. Now, if it's detached, there's no problem with what's called Melechus Tolesh or Kotzer. But the question is, even if it's detached, it's possible as a hadas. And he made it kosher. That's called Tikkun Mana. But he doesn't need that hadas. So that's called the psikration of the Lone Nichola. Anyway, it's a gigantic sugya that's going to come up here. We're up to the Gemara now. The Gemara says the following. How do we know what exactly is a hadas? And the answer is, the Torah says, anaf eitz avos. The word hadas appears how many times in the Torah? Zero, in this context. So Tana Rabbanan, what's anaf eitz avos? The Braisa tells us, it's anaf of chofin es eitzo, which means that the leaves absolutely cover the stem, the tree part. If you look in Rashi, Rashi says, anaf eitz avos. Rashi focuses his attention on the first word. What's the first word of this three-phrase sentence?
Anaf.
Rashi says the opening word gives it all away. Shekulo anaf. The word anaf, which is the first word that defines this hadas, is anaf, means it's kulo anaf. Now, Rabosai, if I told you that something is completely, totally leaves, I would probably be giving you a bag of leaves, which would be nice. You know, you might use it for tea, you know, to give you peppermint leaves or whatever you like in your tea. That's clearly not what the Torah is talking about. So what does Rashi mean? Shekulo, shekulo anaf. It's completely leaves. Oh, so Rashi himself gives you the answer. Because it says anaf eitz. So what do we do with this? Eitz means the stem, the branch of this hadas. But anaf means the leaf. So how do we reconcile this contradiction? So Rashi says, Sha'eitz mechupa bi'olim, that the eitz part of this entity, meaning the stem, is completely covered with leaves. So on the one hand, we could say it's kulo anaf. What does it mean it's kulo anaf? It's completely leaves.
It's a bag of leaves.
It's not a bag of leaves, because that makes no sense.
It's
completely covered with leaves. What's completely covered with leaves? Well, the next word is eight. So it says anaf eights. So it's kulo anaf, but the anaf is covering the eights. So the eights is entirely covered by the anaf. That's what it means. And Rashi adds another phrase over here. Rashi says that al yedei shein asuyim bekliya. V'shochvim al apehem. Okay, we have to focus a little bit on the word clear. Klia is a word that usually is used in the context of weaving, right? When you weave things together, so one goes up and one goes down and it comes around until they're woven together, that's called Klia. And Rashi says that the Klia here means that one covers the other. And if one covers the other, then there's no space which allows you to see the eights. So it's kulo anaf. Kulo anaf means that it's completely covered by anaf. And then Rashi has another thing, v'shokfin alapeya. In other words, one leaf lies on top of the other leaf. There's an overlap in two ways, Rashi says. First, there's an overlap, I guess you could call it vertically. Vertically meaning as you go up the hadas, so this one on this level, this hadas reaches the other hadas, which is the bottom one on the top level, the upper level. That's number one. Number two, the anafim also in their width cover one over the other. So that the, how do we guarantee that it's kulu anaf? It's kulu anaf in two ways. It's kulu anaf because it's covering the stem going up, and it's also covering the stem on both sides because the width of each leaf covers the width of the next leaf on the next level. Okay, now the Gemara wants to do a search, an investigation. Ezahu, which phenomenon qualifies and fits this description that anof of chofin es etzo, who hevi omer zeh hadas? Ezahu, which one is it? Hevi omer zeh hadas. So the Gemara is now going to fight. V'ema, maybe it means Zesa. The olive branch is covered with very thick leaves. And these leaves are very tall, they're very extended, and they're continuous, one on top of the other. And there are so many of them, such a preponderance, if we could use that word again, of leaves on the olive branch, that the olive branch should qualify. Now, I was thinking Noach would probably be very happy about this. You know, the dove brought back an olive branch. Again, I know some people who showed up in the United Nations holding an olive branch that weren't so kosher to Yosha. He's long dead, but I hope he's shoveling the coal over there. Yemach Shemo. But anyway, so this would be cool. Next time you pass an olive tree, we have one in our backyard, then take a look at it and say, hey, that might be anaf eitz avos, which would be really cool. We're going to take olive branches for the mitzvah of the Dalet Minim. So Gemara says, no, we can't do that. Why not? Be'inon avos v'leka, even though the leaves on the olive branch are very thick and manifold, but nevertheless, they don't cover one of the on top of the other on the rochav, on the width. You remember we said it has to go in the length and the width. So it's true that one leaf of the olive branch hits up against the bottom leaf above it, but they don't hover one over the other. They don't lie one on top of the other. Rashi says, Be'inon avos. He says, V'yema zesa kula. Olim, it's completely made up of leaves. Aruchim, they're very long. Ritzufim, they're continuous. When we told Shem Merubim, Achasim, Aseis, they do cover the stem. But no, Be'inon avos. We need a sharsheres. Shiu murkavim ze al ze al ze. They have to lie one on top of the other, and that phenomenon doesn't exist in the olive branch. The Gemara says, V'yema dulva. Rabosa, have you seen a dulva lately? Maybe you did, but you just don't know what a dulva is. No, I don't know what a dulva is, but Rashi tells you what it is in French. Rashi says, Eitz Armon, okay, that's Hebrew. Kash, how do you pronounce this? Kash Tenayer. What does it sound to you?
A chestnut.
Okay. So Rashi gives you the French. The Hebrew is Armon. My mother, may she rest, used to love roasted chestnuts. I don't, can you still get them? I don't know, I haven't seen them in a while.
New York?
No, they used to in New York. They used to have them on every street corner. You know, roasted chestnuts.
And you used to get them
here in Jerusalem. Here in Israel. I don't know, I haven't seen it lately. So again, next time you see one, don't forget to call it a dulva. Okay, dulva is probably Greek, or I don't know what language it's in. Dulva. And just think of the Anaf Eitz Olos, because the Dulva seems like a great candidate for Anaf Eitz Olos. So Gemara says, no, you can't take the leaves of a chestnut stem, of a branch, why not? The Inan Anaf of Chofen Es Eitz of a Leka. Although, let's say most of the leaves actually hit one another on the chestnut tree, but it's not total, it's not complete. You know, they're still part of the eights is still exposed and not covered. Rashi says dulva kaluahu. In other words, one does reach the other. Well, ein olav ritzufin. They're not continuous. Lechasos kol eitzo, to cover the entire eitz. And this is Rashi again, consistent, because Rashi says that anaf eitz almost means kulo anaf. Kulo anaf means that the eitz is completely covered by the anaf. And in the case of the chestnut, that's not so. Tosis, by the way, is not a happy camper. He doesn't know what dulva is, but he says it's certainly not a chestnut, because a chestnut tree doesn't have any of these descriptions. You see, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, at the end of dulva, he says, the ein zeh chestnut, she'eino kalua. Chestnut doesn't have this phenomenon that the leaves... So we have to Google chestnut trees now. And add that to your Google list. All right. Oh, now we have a simple gemara of the Ema Hirduf. Everybody knows what a Hirduf is, right? What is a Hirduf? My gosh. So Rashi later on in this perek says that a Hirduf is something that's similar to a rose bush, which is called Shoshanim, which is called a thorny rose bush. And it grows where there's lots of water, usually on riverbanks. And it has olim. You won't see this in our rose bushes, but in the Hirduf rose bush, the olim cover one another, and they cover the stem completely. And now the Gemara has to rack its brains and come up with a whole new theory as to why Hirduf could not possibly be the right candidate for Anaf Eitz Olos. It can't be because it doesn't cover the stem, because the stem in this case of a Hirduf is completely covered. So Rabbi said, what's your favorite smell, the Hadassim or the rosebush? Ah, if you like the rosebush, then you like the Hava, meaning that we can use a Hirduf instead of Hadassim. Man, the shul is going to smell great. But the Gemara says it's a problem. What do rose bushes have, classically?
Thorns.
They're very prickly. Rashi says, Darchei Noam, Vahai, but this rose bush called a Hirduf is Mivras Boris Esayadayim. It pricks the hands and scratches the hands. Kikotsim him like thorns. Sharoshe Olav Asuyim. The top part of each one of the leaves on this growth are asuyim, they're made chadin. Chadin means very sharp at the end. Kimacha, like a needle. This is a very dangerous tree.
Do we see that the Gemara said it was possible to have a lulav of thorns?
Correct, and that's why a hirduf cannot qualify as a hadas. So we got really excited about taking rose bushes, but the bottom line is, forget it. You cannot take a rose bush, you need to take a hadas, because a rose bush is a violation of the principle of Drachea Darchinon. Does anybody know who in Jewish history was the first and maybe the only person who ever formulated this Drachea Darchinon? Shlomo Melech. He was the author of Mishlei. So this is very interesting. You know, Mishlei is in Ksuvim. You know, Mishlei is not such an integral part of the Torah that we would derive halachas. But the Gemara says that when you don't know what a word means in the Torah, or a phrase in this case of Anaf Eitz Olos, then you should point your finger to anywhere in Tanakh, and whatever pasuk you come up with, that's going to help you define the word. Which is very interesting. The Gemara at the beginning of Baba Kama doesn't know what Negicha is, and the Gemara quotes a psukim all over Tanakh to determine what Negicha is. So we have a rule called Drachea Darchinam. Now, for some reason, which I can't figure out, Rava is not happy with Abaye. That's not the first time in Shas that Rav is not happy with Abaye, but here in this case, Abaye seems to be saying something very logical. Rav Amar, Mehach, I have a different source to exclude the Hirduf. And this is a pasuk in Zechariah, a very, very world-class, famous pasuk, which ends with the words, Ha'emes v'ashalom ehavu, that there'll be peace and truth, and they love, they go together hand in hand. The beginning of this pasuk is a phenomenal pasuk about all the different fast days that we have that will ultimately be converted into l'sasa l'simcha. But at the end, the pasuk says, Ha'emes v'ashalom ehavu. And you cannot consider this hirduf as emes v'shalom. We can love rose bushes, but they're not emes v'shalom. Why not? So Rashi tells you, ze eino, this hirduf is neither emes nor shalom. Why? So I thought because of the thorns on it. Rashi gives a whole different explanation. Shu asui l'sam ha-mochis. You can extract from this bush a toxic substance that will kill. It's lethal. A lethal toxic substance. So if I would ask you about a yellow scorpion, could a yellow scorpion be used for a mitzvah? A yellow scorpion is very, very dangerous. A black scorpion is a little bit less dangerous. And you couldn't use a scorpion for a mitzvah. Again, I don't know what mitzvah I'd have in mind for you, but because ha'emes v'asholom ehav. So we have to ask two questions here. Question number one, why is Rava unhappy with Abaye? And question number two, if Rava has some objection to Abaye, what does he gain by quoting the pasuk ha'emes v'asholom ehav? What did he find in this pasuk in Zechariah that satisfied his curiosity as to why the hirduv is disqualified as hadas? So I want to share with you the insights of the Aruch Laner. Have you heard of the Aruch Laner? He lived about two centuries ago. His name was Ettlinger in Germany. He suffered tremendously from anti-Semitism in Germany in the year 1820. He had to leave the university. In any event, the Aruch Laner says the following. God has many names. Two of those names are written right here in the pasuk in Zechariah, Emes v'Shalom. And both of these words indicate what we call the existence of the world and the continued existence of the world. The world has to exist on truth and on peace. And they are considered, listen to the phrase that he used, Chosmo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How would you translate Chosem? The seal of God. The seal of God is a twofold seal made up of truth and peace. Says the Aruch Laner, the antithesis of those two names of God that are responsible for keeping the world going is a toxic substance that kills. Anything that's destructive would not possibly be tolerated by the seal of God of Emes v'Shalom. And he says the following, that it's true that thorns could prick you and they could scratch you and it's not pleasant, but it could be avoided. You can take it with a glove or avoid the prickly parts. That's not it. What we want to do in order to exclude the hirduf is we want to say that it's impossible to come close to God and use the hirduf to do so, because the hirduf is antithetical to the Almighty. The Almighty is kiyum ha'olam, is the existence of the world. That's emes v'shalom. Something that's toxic could not be emes v'shalom. And here he adds another piece to the part. And he says the following, why didn't Abaye quote the pasuk emes v'shalom ahavu? After all, that's Zechariah Novi. And he says the following, that the extract, the toxic extract of this bush, of this growth called the hirduf, is only lethal for animals and not for human beings. And the machlokas now between Rava and Abaye revolves around the following. I have a species, and if I extract something from this, it could be toxic for animals, but not for human beings. is according to Abaye, that doesn't undermine the ability to use that for a mitzvah, even though the chosem of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is emes v'shalom. Comes along Rava, and Rava says emes v'shalom means the kiyum ha'olam. The animals are also part of God's created world. You know, last week we had the mitzvah of Tzar Bali Chayim, right? Or Saksam Shar B'disha. You see that the Torah is also concerned with animals. So if something would be toxic for an animal, says Rava, that's enough to undermine emes v'shalom ha'olam. So Rava has a twofold machlokas, objection against Abaye. He argues the Abaye on 2 points. First of all, he holds that the fact that you might prick yourself, that doesn't undermine drachei darcheinon. He wants to get a more fundamental reason why you can't take this as part of the dalad minim in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's emes v'shalom ha'olam. And the thorn part doesn't qualify. Second machlokus is that Rava holds that what's antithetical to emes v'shalom ha'olam is something which would be toxic even if only for animals and not for human beings. Abaye, from his perspective, says no. If it's got thorns, you might scratch yourself. That's not what the Torah wants you to take. Nobody could be absolutely careful in all circumstances when he's holding the hirduf that he won't prick himself. I remember I went once with my wife on a tiyul. I forget what country it was in right now. Maybe it'll come to me. Anyway, we saw sabras. So I said to my wife, wow, I have no problem with trumas or maisers or anything. We're in chutz la'aretz, and it's free for the taking. So I grabbed onto one of the sabras. It was one of the worst mistakes I ever made. Yeah. For the next 3 months, I was picking out, you know, pricks. They're so tiny, and you can't even see them, but you just feel them. So Abaye holds that that's not derochel d'achinu. So the hirduf is out. And it's interesting, the Gemara never raised the question of the sabra tree. We would certainly say that that's possible according to Abaye. Abaye disagrees with Rav on another count. He says, I can't accept the principle here of emes v'shalom ha'olam as it applies here, because that's only for animals, and as far as human beings is concerned, this is not a toxic substance. So again, we're going to have to Google this and figure out if all this makes sense according to Dr. Google, but that's the earth one there. Tana Rabbanon, we learned in a braisa, what does the word avos mean? Kalua. You remember the word kalua? We saw it in Rashi. It means it's like woven together, one on top of the other, and they overlap. Kimin klia. Klia means when they overlap. Dome le shalshelis. Shalshelis is a chain, right? So each link in the chain is connected to the one above it and below it. And that's the mashal that he gives to understand what the word avos means. So avos means a chain. Vizel hadas. And the Brisa says that I can identify one particular phenomenon in nature as kalua, kimin, sharsheris, and that's the hadas. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, he says, I'm going to interpret this pasuk differently. I'm going to offer an alternative interpretation of anaf eitz avos. And what does it mean? Eitz, shetam eitzo upirio shove. Now, I don't think that the berries taste exactly like the stem, but he means that if, let's say, you'd suck on the stem, maybe you'd get some sort of a taste that tastes similar to the berries. Rabbi Chananel changes the gears. He completely omits this piece in the Gemara. Why? Because where do you see the word pri in this pasuk? It says anaf eitz avos. I don't hear the word pri. Comes along the drasha here of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, and he says, no, the eitz and the pri have to be the same. Well, that would make sense if it said eitz and pri in the same phrase. But the word pri is completely omitted. So Rabosai, according to Rabbi Chananel, you don't have to do an experiment here and start sucking the stem of hadas and see if it tastes like the berries, because that girsa in the Gemara doesn't exist. Tana, we have another braisa. Eitz avos kasher v'she'eino avos posel. If it's, you know, one on top of the other and they overlap, it's kasher. Hechi dami avos. Amar Rav Yehuda, how do you get avos? V'hu dekaime tlasa tlasa tarfe bikina. Now tlasa tlasa means three at a time, three. And kina means the point out of which tarfe means they shoot out. There's a point on the stem where the leaves shoot out, And how many leaves shoot out from that point?
Three.
In other words, all three leaves at that level of the anaf have to come out of the same exact point. Rabbo say that's not an easy task. And you're going to have to go up and down the hadas to make sure that on every level you have this phenomenon. Rav Kahana Amar, Rav Kahana can't tolerate this. He says, Havos, in order to get them close to each other, all you need is Afilu Trey. You need two leaves that are overlapping. They come from the same exact point. For Chad, and the third leaf is a little bit above or a little bit below. Now, Rav Osai, after seeing this Gemara, I'm going to ask you the following question. I have two Adasim on the table. Which one are you going to buy? One of them has three leaves coming out of the same point. The other has two leaves and one above and one below. Which one are you going to buy, assuming there's no financial consideration here?
The three,
because that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Kaimi tlasa tlasa, tarfi bikina. And guess what? Rav Acha Breda Rava, Rav Acha, the son of Rava, Mahader, meaning he looked high and low, Atrei Vachad, to try to find Adas that would fulfill the requirement of Rav Kahana, meaning there are two leaves coming out of the same point, and the third leaf is either above or below. Very strange. And the Gemara gives the following explanation. Rav Bosa, I want you to listen carefully to this explanation, because it has tremendous repercussions in our whole hashkafa, how we view Halach. Hoil v'nothik mipumei de Rav Kahana. Rav Acha says, since Rav Kahana said that this hadas is kosher, even though the third leaf on each level is coming out of a different point, I'm going to take that leaf because I want to prove that the halach is like Rav Kahana. I'm not looking for the chumrah of the week. I'm going to do Rav Kahana's thing. Jerry, we had a discussion about a kiddush cup, you know, in terms of the shear of a revius for a kiddush cup. If Rav Kahana did it, good enough for me. However, la halacha, we didn't accept this. Why not? Now this is what you call a testimony. Mar is the son of Amemar, and he testifies something in front of Rav Ashi about his own father. And whenever you see a testimony, you know that the poskim are going to hang their, you know, the hat on that peg. And he says to his father, he says about his father, Abba, my father, lahahu, for that kind of hadas that has two leaves coming out of one point and a third leaf coming above and below, which was the hadas that Rav Kahana kashered, he said it was kosher, and Rav Acha dafka looked for such hadas. Hadas shote korile. He called it, my father, that's what I'm able to testify, Marbury, he called it a hadas shote. Now the word shote has two meanings. Shote could mean someone who's idiosyncratic, right? He's an idiot. Or shote could mean a strap with which I smack you. I give you a patch. That's called shote in plural. So the Ritva offers two interpretations why we call this hadas shote. His first interpretation is that the word shote here means someone who's, I don't know, I don't want to use a very, very pejorative term. I don't want to call him an idiot, that sounds too negative. What else? Can we, is there a more diplomatic word we can use?
Intellectually challenged.
Intellectually challenged, okay.
Is that deranged?
Yeah, deranged, okay. A shote, by the way, is not what you and I think it is. You know, a shote, for example, in Gemara says someone who sleeps in a cemetery. I mean, if you wanted to study what a shote is, you'd probably need a degree in psychiatry, and I'm not exaggerating. It's very profound to figure out what shote is. You know, we tend to look at the Gemara and we simplify it because we translate it to our language. That's the translation is the worst thing for Torah, but that's what we do. We translate. A shote, says the Ritva, is someone who doesn't organize himself properly. In other words, we believe in organization. Again, it doesn't mean that we have to be OCDC, right? You know, you can't go overboard. But generally speaking, we like to be organized. And then Amemar is saying about this, you know, this hadas, that it's not well organized. Because if it was perfectly organized, then all three leaves would come out of the same point. I personally like the second interpretation of the Ritva. Why is it called Hadash? Shotim, Yiloshin Shotim. Shotim, he says, is something that you use to hit someone. And, you know, you could use it in a very productive way. Let's say, for example, you know, you want to clean off something, so you bang it, you know, get rid of the dust, or whatever you might be ready to come up with. So he says that this Hadas, that's what I maybe wanted to demonstrate, he wanted to dramatize, is worth shotim, meaning use it as a strap to punch something, you know, to bang something, but don't use it for a mitzvah. So we got up Rabosai to Tanur Rabbanan, and I'll just give you one line preview of what's coming around, and that is the question of rov. You remember that we discussed when we read the Mishnah that in the case where the olim fell off the stem, or if they got dry, we spoke about rov. Now, what's the source of rov? That's the brisa that we're about to embark upon in Mirtz Hashem tomorrow. So what I'd ask you to do is make a little note, if you can, where it says Tanur Rabbanan. And I wish you all a great day.
Thank you.
And that's where we'll stop. Okay, then.
Just so you're aware, I'm going away.